You're listening to Studio 22.
Welcome to Studio 22. I'm your host, Will Meldman, alongside the beautiful, the bold, and the beautiful Brock O'Hearn.
The BBB right there.
How are you?
Well, I guess four Bs, huh? I'm good. Yeah. Another great day in sunny California.
Love that. We are here with actor, comedian, impressionist, Jonathan Kite.
What's up, baby? How are you, man?
I am fantastic. I'm excited to chat with you. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, dude, I wish I had my own bobblehead.
Yeah.
Just move your head around a little bit. Yeah. Be your own bobblehead,
dude,
man.
I always said I am my own bobblehead because, like, no matter when I drink, no matter how thin I get in the body, I have, like, lollipop syndrome where my face just keeps going. And, wow. I have no, like with Leo, right? Leo, great guy. I mean, never, you know, but his body is turning into, you know, sort of a,
right.
Like a penguin.
Reversal.
The dad bod.
But he has such a thin face. And so I was like, bro, I have the exact opposite. So that's what I look like.
It's one of my favorite gifts I've ever gotten by this guy right here.
Oh, that's awesome.
He knows I'm a big fan of The Office too. So it's kind of like a.
I mean, that's pretty good merch because I'm
going on the
road. Dude, I'm going on the road.
Dude, he's got the same hat on basically right now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm saying like you're living embodiment. Could you imagine just you standing in front of like a table at Comic-Con?
We should do that at the table next year.
That'd be awesome.
We're big Comic-Con guys.
I saw you had a comic book rack out there.
Yeah, it's just out of pure love for storytelling, visual art, all that. You mentioned The Walking Dead, too. Like, I have a zombie comic that's basically me and my dog taking on zombies all over.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah,
I love comic books. I always wanted to be Plastic Man.
Oh, yeah.
If they did. It's weird because, like, they were going to do a movie with Leslie Jones, you know, Plastic Man. And, and then it got scrapped or whatever. It was a miniseries, but I always thought like that would be a good one for me to do.
Plastic Man, he's like Reed Richards, right?
He's
Elastic.
Yes.
Yeah.
What I always thought of, he looked like a caricature of Superman or Shazam because they sort of make him more of an elongated face. He tells jokes the whole time. He's sort of like, like an exaggeration of those guys.
Yeah.
They don't have the same powers, but he sort of is just like a goofball.
Yeah, right.
And so I'm like,
it's a great character, yeah.
Dude, they're making Madam Web, and I can't get a Plastic Man movie made. Is that my camera? I can't get a Plastic Man movie made.
Bro, I haven't seen Madam Web yet, but it looks like it's getting ripped apart online.
Dude, it's.
Did you see it?
I didn't see it.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. But I have nary a good word from anyone who has.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a big Sydney Sweeney fan. You know?
Yeah, man. I mean, they caught a guy masturbating in a movie theater.
That's dark, dude.
That's dark. The dark web. He was web slinging.
No, come on.
How weird is that? But you know what? Here's the thing. When you make the Dune bucket from popcorn just look like a fleshlight.
Yeah, that was weird.
A sandworm fleshlight.
That was a weird choice.
Yeah. I mean, come on. You're inviting that stuff in there.
Yeah. I've seen some weird stuff in theaters, man. I used to go all the time. I had that AMC pass, you know.
And dude, I still have it.
Yeah.
We go all the time. My buddies and I go all the time.
Dude, I love going to movies.
We got to catch some together.
Yeah. One of my favorite things is going to movies. But the last couple times I've been in there, I've seen people walk in with trash bags filled with, I don't even know what's in there, but they're pulling out the nastiest smelling quadruple cheeseburgers I've ever seen. They're taking naps four rows next to you and snoring. Like, I just keep seeing one weird thing after another. I'm like, dude, it's just going to be a matter of time before I'm in the wrong theater at the wrong time.
I saw guys getting in a fist fight when I went to go see Peter Jackson's King Kong. And I don't know if the movie just riled them up, but like, there was this older guy, like an older gentleman, you know?
Yeah.
And he sort of, I don't remember, but this young guy started fist fighting him in a movie theater.
What the heck?
Dude, and this was, you know, I mean, this was a long time ago, so it wasn't like, well, you know, Trump, COVID, whatever, like people blame violence on. This was just like it was crazy, and then people had to like pull them apart in the theater. It's like, did you ever see the old movie Bachelor Party with Tom Hanks when he goes into the theater and he's mirroring like the fight with the bad guy and he actually punches this girl in the face and she's like, wow, this is the most 3D movie I've ever seen. You know? It's a great gag. That's like, we were watching that.
That's crazy.
It was crazy. And the movie was over, by the way.
Are
it wasn't like in the movie. It was like the credits were rolling, the lights were on, somebody bumped into somebody, and then it just became like round one. You know,
it's funny, when it actually reminds me of, how old was I? I was like 17, maybe 16. I used to go to doubleheaders all day, every day, and I was pretty broke, so a lot of times I'd sneak in, which I don't recommend doing to anybody, you know, it's illegal. But I did, and I remember I snuck into this movie, and this fight broke out like three rows in front of us. This chick and, I don't know if it was a chick and a chick or a chick and a guy, but it was nasty fight. They went at it, basically stopped the whole movie, you know. And then at the end of it, I remember coming down there like, if you guys could just sign that you were a witness here for all the people watching. And I'm like sitting here like, dude, I'm about to get busted that I snuck in here, like, what's going on? Like, I don't know what's going on.
I don't
have
my ticket.
Yeah, but exactly. And then so I was like, yeah, I'll sign it, you know, no problem. I tried to sneak out, but they cut me off before I could get out. They gave me free tickets for signing as a witness, and I was like, this is the best day ever.
Unbelievable. I thought they were taking you down, like how Al Capone got taxes.
You imagine?
That was you. That's how Brock got taken down. Double sneaks.
Movie tickets.
We tried to do the three-peat one time.
Yeah,
that's a tough one. That was tough.
It's a long time, and especially if you have a little bit of time in between the two films, it's a long time.
Or people who did like the Barbie, the Barbenheimer. I was just like, dude, go see your family. I mean, that's like
a friend,
genius,
you know?
Marketing ploy, though.
Incredible. Yeah. But I, you know, the commentary that was online about, I mean, I'd feel pretty weird if that was Japan.
What
like
do you mean?
Sort of
like
making it like cutesy, like the, I mean, obviously putting those together, they're Warner Bros.
Oh,
films.
Cause it, yeah.
That it's like, you know,
more kid oriented, and
they're sort of just like, well, this'll be fun. See this movie about this horrific thing that we did.
Yeah.
And see Barbie. And I love the film. I thought it was one of the best films I've seen in a very long time. But yeah, I just thought like making that campaign cutesy was sort of like deflecting from the seriousness and sort of the atrocity of the film.
Yeah,
the point of it.
The terrible things we did, like you said, absolutely.
Yeah. Like if it was like 9/11 and then like a Pixar movie. You know, one of them was about planes and the other one was about 9/11.
Yeah, sorry, I'm slow sometimes. It takes me a bit to catch up.
Dude, you're good. I love the tats, dude. I don't have any.
Oh, thank you.
My tattoo is that I don't have any tattoos.
I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, Banksy, Henri Matisse, Bible verses, my family. Just got it all.
Yeah, dude. What is, what's the one up there?
Wet Willie.
This one?
Flame Boy and Wet Willie.
Oh, World Industries.
Oh, yeah, of course, dude.
Our friend Hannah Stocking did that one, actually.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I used to skate when I was in high school.
Yeah. No, 100%.
Yeah. Alien Workshop.
Yep.
Dude, all that stuff. I
Osiris, you have those Osiris shoes?
Dude, I'm wearing them now.
Oh, yeah.
No, I have wheelies on.
Yeah. Soaps. Remember Soaps?
No.
They were the shoes with the wheels on that you could, or no, the grinding pad on the bottom. So you could like grind. They were banned at our school because everyone would like
leave marks everywhere.
No, oh, really?
Dude. Yeah, everyone. Yeah,
I can imagine. I just feel like you're instantly going to break an ankle or smack your skull open with those things, dude.
Oh yeah, they did.
It's a little
I mean,
horrible idea.
That's the thing. I mean, well, but I feel like people didn't care. Like we obviously skate videos.
The '90s, man.
Up. Oh, dude, nobody cared.
Yeah.
So it was
what
like,
did I? I just saw this video of this kid. He had to be like 12. Freaking genius. But he was talking about how we went into, he thinks we went into you know, the Mandela effect. Mm-hmm. He started breaking it down and he said he thinks we went into an alternate universe just slightly over a little bit because everything has been changed just slightly, like most things or whatever. So he thinks we're in this alternate universe, and I'm like, if you think about it, 2019 and before was pretty damn good. Now it's a little weird. It's been getting a little weird.
A little weirder. And it's like a continental drift where it like feels like it's just shallow. But if you look at, like, you know, before the dark times and after the dark times, like, it's a little weird. About even like I think about the structure of life and all this stuff that just sort of came out of it, and how there was like, when it's little, you can't really feel the vibrations, but then it starts to spiral and get, you know, sort of expands. It's a little tough.
It all started in 2016 when Ghostbusters, the new female reboot, they partnered with the Hillary Clinton campaign. I think that was when it all...
You think so? Let me tell you something.
Maybe it might cut that, but...
No. Keep that in. I'll tell you why. I have a joke that I've been working on for a long time about Madam Web. It's a little too on the nose, but it's like totally true. I said, I have a joke about female empowerment, and I, you know, like... I'm all for feminism and equality. I just don't think we're going to get that way by remaking male-dominated movies with, you know,
turning women into men.
Yeah. Well, I think the problem with Ghostbusters are it was literally about three repressed scientists and their janitor bunny who use laser penises to get a jizz ball into a tiny box. I was like, yeah, that's the one. Like, you know what I mean? Out of all the movies they could have made.
Just to kick it off.
Yeah, I was like, why would we? But I mean, listen, it, you know.
Some of my favorite heroes in action films, too, are, you know, Ridley in Alien. Laura Croft is a badass. Like, one of my comic characters is modeled after Laura Croft and Black Widow. And, you know, so I definitely think there's ways to do that where everyone loves it for sure.
Ridley, I mean, the Aliens, I love that entire series. Have you seen the new one of the Predator called Prey that was on Hulu?
Yeah. We watched that together, actually.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
I thought it was so good. That the girl they had,
some who crazy
the
action lead,
so good. Yeah. Very believable. I mean, I'll go see those movies no matter what because I love that universe.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But it's like, but some of them you're sort of like, this is you know, it's like, did the Predator just get a job at Chick-fil-A? Like, why are we doing this one? And but that one felt like exactly in the vein of the original stuff where they just went from time zone, you know.
Yeah.
And he was de-evolved with his weapons too.
Yep.
It was cool.
Using nature again.
Yeah, it was very cool. Very, very, very cool.
I liked it a lot more than Shane Black's
The Predators.
One. Yeah, yeah.
I thought that, you know what though about that one was kind of crazy? That you got to see another planet, and in a way, to like, I loved when they were walking and then the moon or the sun didn't move because that's how long the days were.
Yeah.
Oh wait, maybe it's which one was his? Maybe his was the Predator. Is that the same one? I just can't remember.
Adrian Brody when they start and they're free falling out of the sky.
Yeah, different one.
Oh, okay, yeah.
My bad.
No, cuz the Predator's one was wild.
Yeah.
Cuz think about it, we always, you know, we're top of the food chain. Certainly Brock is. And we're top of the food chain adjacent. We're top of the food chain plus one and two. But, you know, like, do you think about that, other aliens and whatnot? I mean, yeah, we're immediately, we're like in the mailroom in those corporations. That it's like you couldn't, I mean, it's like that is unbelievable how we've been able to. That's what's crazy about how, like, the nonsense. Obviously, I think for different people, there's been terrible things, not just 2019.
Yeah, yeah.
But you got to think about how we haven't imploded as a people, because it's like we're limitless. We don't really have any, we are our only competition.
Right.
In the wild, that it's like, and we, you know, we thin our herds, but it's weird that, like, not, you know, we're thank God we haven't met aliens that would just come over and knock us off.
Yeah. 100%.
Probably try to take them out too.
Dude. Yeah. This is my message to the aliens. I'm on your side. If you come down, let me know what you need.
Come in peace.
We come, yeah. Well, they won't, though.
Right.
What if they do?
I mean, I hope they do. But I think of every time you think of a dominant species coming, I mean, certainly in human history.
Yeah.
With other humans and with animals, that if we could dominate something, we do. There's no reason. We could have lived in harmony, by the way, with a lot of these of different cultures.
Oh, yeah.
We could have.
We could be living in harmony right now across the globe.
Exactly. Yeah. But we choose not to because of ego, greed, all this stuff, you know, fear, whatever it is.
Everything that is human.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And, and you know, so you got it. That's why we got to keep the
if you think about
friends
it,
close
the
and the crystals closer. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And I've been saying that for years.
That's fucking awesome.
We're going to put that on T-shirt. But no, that's even in nature too. Like if there's a more dominant weed or plant or whatever, it just takes over, right?
An invasive species. Yeah. We are the ultimate
survival of the fittest.
Yeah, invasive species. I love watching. Do you do Planet Earth with David Attenborough?
Yeah.
Dude, so the original ones, I feel like,
I know you got that up your sleeve.
Well, I could do him for sure.
Oh
here
yeah.
We are looking at the bobblehead. I cannot tell if he agrees or disagrees with me.
But the thing about David, those original, they would never show the violence, you know, in the originals. Like they would only show like, and he got away.
Right.
But
right.
Now I think people with the internet, they got to jack it up, dude. They're now like,
it's aggressive. Yo, that's the highlight. That's the whole point.
That giraffe fucking ninja kicking those lions in the face.
Yeah.
I mean, they are. Yeah.
What's the one? You had Snoop Dogg narrating the lizard escaping the snakes. It was like 100 snakes, and like he's the baby lizards are just like taken off, and all of them
was
getting
he on his back feet.
Like,
Yeah.
I love those, dude.
So sick.
What were you gonna say?
I was gonna say that actually. That's I really enjoy that one. Yeah.
Have you guys seen the lizard video with Snoop Dogg? I too was.
What
gonna
is
say that?
That?
No. I'm like, wait.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, that one. Yeah, yeah.
I had Brock on my podcast a while back, and we didn't get into this, but you know, I love like when my team was like, "Would you be a guest?" I wrote back like, absolutely, instantly, of course.
Dude, appreciate it.
I love being a guest. I mean, especially with friends, but I love guesting on people's podcasts. And I did a podcast last year for like 6-8 months. And, you know, it's interesting because we were talking about just how hard it is to get a podcast off the ground. Yeah. And even if you're known, like there's plenty of people who are, you know, way more famous than the average podcaster that are still, you know, struggles and troubles and whatnot, because you're literally competing with everything in the history of time. Right. Like if
simultaneously,
there's nothing that you can't get, you know, whether you have to pay for it a little bit or it's for free on streaming or whatnot. Everything is archived right now. And not only that, it's in, obviously, you know, it's at your fingertips.
Right.
And so the thing is with the podcast, for me, I'd love to come and guest and like stay for a day. But I think like for me, it was just taking up so much of my time because I'm on the road doing stand up and I would get, and I'd usually have to do it on Monday so that it would release on Thursday. And if I was on the road and it was just me, I mean, I had guys guest with me, you know, like Ryan was on the episode with you, but it's like it all was on me. So if I had a long weekend or if I was gone for 2 weeks, like straight doing stand up, I'd have to like figure a way, because it's like
you want to be entertaining. You want to be funny. You want to be lively. But if it's like if you don't have energy, it's like, dude, I've had that. I can't even tell you how many times I've been on this spot. I'm like, there's not enough caffeine in the world.
For sure. But you at least have each other.
Yeah,
for sure.
Which is great. Yeah. And the thing is, you know, especially if I'm on the road, to come back on Monday, usually Monday's the day that I have to get everything done that I didn't do for like Wednesday through Sunday.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was always like I drove an hour to the podcast studio. We did it for an hour and then an hour home. And it was just like a 3 hours in the middle of the day.
Oh, yeah.
And I enjoyed it. I tried it. I had a great time with it. I got out of it what I wanted to get out of it. But I just was, and it coincided with, I actually burst hemorrhaged my vocal cord.
Oh no.
There was no rhyme or reason. I went to a doctor. No, it just happened in life. Wow. And I went to a specialist. He was like, yeah, you just bruised it. Oh. So I was on vocal rest for like a week or two.
Oh wow.
And I was just like, this is not, and I had just come off doing shows, like six shows back to back for 4th of July weekend or something.
That's crazy, man. Yeah. One of our buddies, Jeff Beecher, just got, who's that? He was on the podcast.
Madhouse.
Yeah. He had vocal surgery. He was on like vocal rest for like 3-4 weeks or something like that.
Oh yeah, it's no joke.
I can't imagine, like, even if I love my alone time, not talking to someone, how difficult is it to not talk?
You could just get the Stephen Hawking app. Welcome back to the podcast.
Isn't there a comedian? He's like he uses that.
There
like,
is a guy, out of Austin. But I do it sometimes on stage, but I was just like, that would be like the best. Why not? Like, you wouldn't, dude, if you had to be on vocal rest, you could just, but he has to type it in,
it takes a minute.
But it takes a minute, but I mean, he's pretty darn good at it and he has saved phrases, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, that would be, could you imagine that though? Even like 2 years ago, you couldn't have done that.
Yeah.
That you just had to be quiet.
Kind of on the point where you're saying that you're competing against everything, right? Like, that's why we're never going to have another Michael Jackson, another Elvis, another, you know, whatever. No one's ever going to be that famous. People are going to, it's not going to be the same, you know? There are high levels of, like, look at Taylor Swift.
Well, massive, I was going to say, I would wait and see, only to see how long she can sustain this tour. Because if she can do this tour, like she did all the, you know, North America this year, doing Europe next year, right?
Yeah.
If she can do that every couple years and still fill those stadiums, she will be this generation's Michael Jackson. Because
it's actually pretty accurate.
She has a catalog. That's the only way I was going to say. Because to your point, most other people that were big, they didn't have a catalog and they fell off so significantly.
Yeah, if you're not constantly making new stuff for them to listen to or take in, you know, or buy or whatever, then yeah.
And she's already made the transition where, you know, somebody young, because if you listen to like Black or White and then like Who's Loving You, like two different Michael Jackson songs, right? One when he's young, one when he's older. You have to make the transition to what people will buy, I think, in pop music and what's cool now.
Yeah.
And then
you stay relevant.
Yes. But then at a certain point, you are relevant. Like nobody is saying, man, I wish, I wish the Rolling Stones sounded more like Lil Xan. Like, they're just not saying that. So it's like, whatever you do, you become the thing that's enough.
Yeah.
But it takes a minute. Because I think about Justin Timberlake, you know, like he was doing it and then he took a break for a long time. And I think he's releasing an album. I'm curious to hear what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I don't know what for me, I don't know what he sounds like.
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest gap that I've seen is with Justin Bieber. Like, when he obviously, like, I think even the music was a little bit young for me at the time. And then when he dropped an album, I can't remember how long it was now, but it was like, wait a second, this is actually This guy's killing it right now.
Oh yeah, Peaches and Goat.
Yeah,
dude,
yeah, yeah.
Or hip hop in it.
Crushed it, dude. And I'm like,
voice sounds.
He bridged that gap. You know,
yes,
he appealed now to a older audience, right?
Absolutely,
and then everyone loves him.
Kind of like what David Guetta did back in like the late like 2008, 2011, that time where he kind of took EDM and combined it with R&B and Usher and Black Eyed Peas, and then you just have two worlds colliding and just exponentially
everybody's fans.
Yeah,
yeah.
And also as a producer, it's like what DJ Khaled does. Like you can sort of. You, in a weird way, like obviously DJ Khaled is responsible for those hits, but the pressure is off him, like in terms of, like he has to decide the sound, but there's something about having somebody relevant, like being somebody relevant that you want to be on those songs. That's such a hard thing.
Yeah.
You know, like I was saying, I don't know if we talked about this last time, but the weirdest thing about when you're on a show that that's relevant, a lot of people work, you know, like, mm-hmm. and but to be on a show, that's why everybody, I think, wants to be on Saturday Night Live.
Right.
Because it makes you, I mean, it's a great show. I mean, it's been on for 50 years. All the detractors are, it sucks, it's nothing. It's like, dude, well, we're still talking about it, so it's got to be something.
Yeah, it's still relevant, right. Yeah.
And so, and relevancy is the hardest thing in the world. You can be famous, a lot of famous people out there, doesn't make them relevant.
Yeah.
And that is the thing about music, it's almost like the most, when you look at, like, the Grammys the other day, I didn't recognize half the people up there.
Right.
And those are the people that are relevant right now. Doesn't mean that they're going to be relevant next year. Doesn't even mean, like, they're famous of the moment. And that's, I think, really tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's, man, it's a hard road, like, being in entertainment, any facet, right? Because you can have that one thing that hits, and if you're not doing anything outside of that, or it doesn't, nothing else hits for you after that, nobody's calling, wants to put you in, it's like, well, there's that child actor that was dope 30 years ago.
Dude, no one is, I mean, you have a team, but I feel like the people that I know that fell off, they were like, okay, the phone will ring. And you have to, opinion is, even when you're on the shit, the phone doesn't, like, you can't expect the phone to ring.
If you want to look at it from almost an analytical perspective, you start to break down the people that have made it on the highest level. They're the ones that are going and making it happen. And very rarely, but every now and again, someone comes through and then they hit and then they ride that wave and they keep getting the call, right? But doesn't mean they're not working their ass off. The people that work their asses off are the ones that guarantee their spot. Because it's hard to get there, harder to stay there. And I'm sitting here like, okay, look, you might have an opportunity, but what are you going to do with that?
Totally.
What do you do with it? Because this industry, all industries are difficult, you know? But this one specifically, especially now that there's so much out there, like, how are you going to stay relevant? How are you going to stay in it? You know,
totally.
What are you doing that's different?
And I also think with people want to buy you, but they also want to buy you playing a character.
Yeah.
So it's a tough thing, right? So it's like, at least with lawyers, because I always think like lawyers are the same thing as actors. Like they just don't need anymore.
Yeah.
Yet somehow theater schools and law degrees are being given out every year to people who earn them.
Yeah.
But it's like, I can't imagine, especially now with AI, how they're doing so much of the lawyering, you know?
Oh, yeah. You could just write a contract up, right?
And it's like,
that's crazy.
All the research that you kind of go everything about, like, you know. So, but the thing with us is ours is our identity.
Yeah. I mean, how many times have you heard somebody who comments on a very famous, very talented actor, but they don't like him, so they don't watch any of their stuff because of their political views or because of their, you know, they did one thing at one time that just nobody, they just didn't like or whatever. I don't know what, to me, I'm sitting here like, damn, you have to do everything right all the time.
Dude, all the time. You're constantly being scrutinized. You're in your own version of the Truman Show. Even if you're not, it's insane. Yeah. And then you know, it's interesting because with my comedy, I try to go through, I mean, I tell jokes that are probably left and right because I'm not a political person, but it's weird how like people need to know things about you before they're willing to laugh about you now. They're like in certain areas, and you got to think like, and it's a weird thing because people we're at war. Like that's the thing I think about since 2019, 2020, we're at war. Like not we, but just the general, there's something out there that people are vehemently against. Mm. Even if like the nicest people, like your aunt on Facebook or whatever,
just as a whole, right?
There's something that she hates. In a way that I'm not sure that like I was aware. By the way, maybe hate was always alive and well, but I don't remember seeing people. And I think because we have so many outlets for it.
Yeah.
So then we're so tribal now.
Yeah.
So then it's like, are you with us? Because if you're not with us, you're against us.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly think the algorithms of every social media company is hate gets more clicks. Hate is monetizable more than happiness or love or anything like that. So I think that is definitely part of it. I think you're right. It's like some inner,
I think,
emotional stuff too, but like, it's just, it's undeniable, right? It's like,
there's been a societal,
the way they make money.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I would say like it to me, it appears like there's just been a massive societal shift where people feel, you know, before it was survival of the fittest, right? So you get the alpha male that'll come out and say in the Lion Kingdom, right? The strongest, baddest, toughest one wins, right? Now it's not that. It's who has the best lawyer, who has the, you know, who's going to sabotage you, who's going to, you know, like, how untouchable does this person feel? How much money do they have that they can screw you over? How can I cancel you because I have more power in the media? You know, well, like, it's shifted, right?
It's also people, like, every system, unfortunately, like, and I don't mean illegally, but you always have to game a system, because, like, I think of social media, and it's like, what you have to say, like, you know, your caption is something like, comedian destroys heckler, like that was right, such right. a, you know, cliche. Yeah. And then people were like, click on it, and then you would watch it and it would be the most tame BS yeah. in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
But then people were like, but it got you to click on it yeah. because it's the hate, right? Whereas, like, you know, I think about the clips of mine that do well, they're probably impressions clips, or I've had a few, but one of them from the podcast was I was making fun of a film that people really liked, and I was, you know, I mean, I tend to talk pretty fast anyway. I've never done cocaine in my life, but people will say, like, is this guy on coke all the time? And I was ripping on this movie, and my buddy and I were just sort of not like, we weren't like tearing it apart, but we were just sort of like showing the humor of how ridiculous the film was. And the comment section lit up. It's like, gotta be one of my top three videos of all time. Oh, it's on my wow. Instagram. And it's just like, and the hate that they had towards us about it. But then you had like, you had, it has 20,000 likes or whatever it is, yeah. or however many likes. And you're just like, yeah, but people agree with us that this is an insane film. But yeah. they just, because they think it's an insane film, they don't feel the need to comment, because I'm already doing the comment, you know, for them.
Right.
But then the people who are like, no, we love this film and we're not being represented in this conversation, because it's yeah. like, it's like, oh, you like bananas? Great. Yeah, but you didn't say you liked oranges. You're like, yeah, bitch, because we're not talking about bananas.
Yeah.
Like, we're not talking about oranges. Talking about oranges. I mean, yeah. Like, but that's the thing, is like, people feel like,
but it's a part of that, I think, is that tribal response, right? So yeah. And then people jump on the bandwagon. I feel like the majority of it are people are just angry and they just want to vent about something that they can be angry about. Or a lot of people are just out there poking the bear just totally. To see what happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And or people troll, and, you know, so that's the thing. In a weird way, like, all comments are good comments, because, like, it's not even that I read the comments on anything, yeah. to be totally honest with you. I was just looking one time and I was like, whoa, this really blew up. And then, you know, people could say whatever they want about me or the show or my buddy or whatever. And it's like, it doesn't really, I mean, to be honest with you, like, I don't really care. And so the thing is, I think, though, you need to game that system, though, or to be like, you know, here's the thing about Palestine. Like, start off, like, saying like that, and then people were like, you hate Palestine? I was like, even though I just said, here's the thing, but you need to trigger people.
Yeah.
So you have to game
yeah.
their trigger response.
Yeah.
And that's what pushing the algorithm, which is such a destructive thing.
Yeah. I was watching this video earlier on Instagram, just like scrolling through. It was a massive cargo ship crashing in the waves. And then it goes to the guy. He's like, buy my marketing thing. I'm like, great. You know, like, capture. Dude. And then, yeah.
He gotcha.
Yeah.
Dude, marketing
yeah.
worked.
Yeah.
But what you said, I think, nails it, is it's a game. It feels like a big game now, yeah. you know, and you got to play the game sometimes just to get ahead. It makes it very difficult to be, a lot of times, I feel, just a genuine, authentic person when you're trying, at least in an industry where, and it just in a world in general, because, like, I think before we used to try to impress people who were in front of us, you know, like, we would want to, like, make that person like us, or you know, it was about who's around you. Now it's like, let's try to get 20 million people online to like me that I'm never going to see.
Well, that's what's so funny, is that I think that the good people will still, the cream will still rise to the top, you know, because... Mm-hmm. The idea that when you do like a stand-up clip in my world, they edit out all the air, you know, so it's just like a quick, so this comic will look masterful. And then you'll go to see them, and it's just like, and it's just like, it's just going through everything. Yeah. And you go, they have no pace. They have no.
They got a great editor.
That, and that's what it is. And so I think, like, you know, we were talking off mic about how going into auditions and stuff. I think at the, you know, if they're going to put real money behind you, they'll care about the authenticity. Whereas if they're just trying to, you know, if it's sort of like a middle game, you can edit your way out of that.
Well, how many times have you seen it now where it's, they put faces or actors or actresses in front of or in the position of a multi-hundred-million-dollar film or billion-dollar franchise, and then they go off the deep end and you're like, wow, everyone doesn't like this person because they open their mouth and they are not nice. You know?
Well, they just look the part. I mean, I think it's also the things that you're going out for, because I think of like Jonathan Majors, right?
Right.
So you think of, I don't know what happened. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't there.
It's no longer the Kang Dynasty.
But it's not, but as of, it's not going to be Kang Dynasty. And you think about, and here's the issue with a guy like that. If what he said, you know, I'm like, as if my lawyer's in the other room, like, you can't say that. But I don't know what happened is the thing. And maybe I read about it and then my mind didn't retain it, you know?
Right.
But it's like, if people do something illegal, yes, they need to be punished. But I think that there's something, aside from illegality, America and international fans, there is, you're not going to like everyone you meet. And the idea that, so I think it's best for me to keep my personal life essentially like out of my acting life.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want, because the thing is, we want to like Captain America, but we don't want to know that Chris Evans, you know, sometimes doesn't wipe all the way.
Right.
You know, like, there's imperfections about these people, but not. So if you're going to play like an iconic character, it's, you know, unless it's like Robert Downey Jr., where we love that he overcame his alcoholism and his drug addiction.
Yeah.
I.e. Tony Stark.
It's a great story.
It's a great, everybody loves a comeback story. That's why Mickey Rourke. Yeah. I mean, you know, with The Wrestler. Love The Wrestler.
Great song.
But that's a very niche thing. Whereas, like, if you look at everything else, we want you to be, because obviously, like, Wolverine has flaws, but we don't want Hugh Jackman to have any.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And what do you really know about Ryan Reynolds? Nothing. You know that Blake Lively, he's part of us, you know, he's Deadpool. I can't wait, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like, you don't really know anything about him. And so you know that he's generous and he Mint Mobile and all these, like, you know, things that he's
a great entrepreneur. Yeah.
He's a great entrepreneur. I think I heard something about altruism. Like, I think you donated some stuff recently, but that's it. And I go, that is a dynamite PR person.
Yes.
So that's great what you marketer. Need more than anything.
Yeah.
Because you're gonna fuck up.
Yeah.
And so, but man, when you get in those Marvel movies, like, we talked a lot about Thor, where I was like, how are you not in the Thor world? But it's like those people, they are very, I don't really know anything about Chris Hemsworth, and I like him very much, but I don't know anything about him. I don't know politically where he stands. I don't know anything.
It's true. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I think even coming into that as an actor, you gotta, it's funny having a podcast where you actually talk about a lot of different topics, right?
Yeah.
But it's that where, exactly what you're saying. Like, if you want to get to the top, you have to. It's like this PG idea of a person, right? Yeah. You fall in love with the idea of the person, absolutely, right? Instead of who they really are. And it's just, I don't know, man. There's a part of me where it's like, we don't live in a time where I feel like you can say whatever you want and do whatever you want. Like, it's, I mean, not that maybe that's not the best thing, way to say it, but like. And everyone's opinion, it shouldn't be voiced.
But in our business,
I mean?
If I may, our business is tough because people are buying a product, right? It's like if in a weird way, and I look at the NBA, right? People screw up, but I think, like, because I'm a basketball fan, I don't really follow the other sports all that much. But it's like, if somebody screws up, they all have problems, but it's like you don't really care about it in a way, as long as the game's not being hurt. As long as they can continue to do their thing. I mean, people are self-destructive. You can't police people's, you know, actions to the best of your ability. But, you know, it's like they're adults. These are adults.
And stuff happens. Like, you can be in the wrong place at the wrong time and be accused of something that you didn't even do. But, yeah, exactly what you're saying. Like, and you have to look at it. Like, it's funny being an artist, right? And you're a creator and you want to go out there and just, like, make art. And that's, I wish I could do that all day, every day. And that was the beauty of my life.
Yeah.
But it comes down to, like, it is a business at the end of the day. And if someone's going to invest in you to be the face of that business in any way, shape, or form, you want to make sure that their investment is, you know, safe, that it makes sense for them. Because if I'm going to go in there and be the face of it, but then I'm out here doing all this crazy stuff in the streets and threatening people and doing all, that's not a good look. That hurts the entire establishment, and then it ruins the chances for people like the rest of us to even get in there.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing is though, I think that's what comedy is so good for, because you can get up there and tell jokes as long as you're like, these are jokes. Like, I'm just trying to make you laugh. I don't, you know, agree with, you know, politics is the easiest thing to use here. I don't agree with this guy or this guy, you know, or whatever. I don't care. I'm just thinking it's funny about this. And if you are just like, isn't that funny? And I think that's why it's so important for comedy to just keep pushing that.
Yeah.
Because you shouldn't know. I mean, listen, people can get up there and talk about it like, oh, I hate this guy or this girl or whoever, or I don't like this stance on abortion or gun control or whatever, but as long as they're being funny, and if that's the point is to be funny but not to do a TED talk, and I think that's the problem, is we get blurred lines that right now people are using it as like a platform, a soapbox to get up there, and you're like, oh, but where's the jokes? And it's just like, and by the way, comedy subjective, I totally get that, but I think I'm sort of take all that, and I keep a very private life. Like, even my Instagram is, and my TikTok, like, I don't even run my TikTok. I don't even run my Facebook. Those are two separate people that I approve things. I don't want to be on them. I try not to be on them as much as I possibly can. And so for me, it's just like, you know, I don't live in my reality as much as I can, and not and let other people promote that reality the way you would a publicist or your agent or your manager.
Yeah,
or
That's smart. A professional way to do it, though, right?
Yeah, but I think I'm happier, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, dude, it's like you got to live life, you know? That's what I was realizing. I went up to the comedy store.
It's having, like, social media, for example, is it's a tool that you should be using to make your life better versus it using you. Because that's the problem, is we get sucked into it all the time. I think anybody who's ever had social media has sat there for 6 hours at one point in their bed, never got out of bed, and they just scrolled and scrolled and scrolled. And you're sitting there like, wow, I just wasted half my day, and I did absolutely nothing except for fried my brain a little bit.
Yeah, because it gives
dopamine hits all the time. Yeah. Dude. It's wild.
What were you going to say about the comedy store?
No, I was at the comedy store last night, and what I realized is there's something that I need to work on in my bits where they're not personal, because I started out as an impressionist. Like, I mean, I had jokes. I always had jokes. It wasn't just like, here's Christopher Walken at a car wash, you know? But like, I did jokes and opinions that I had, but it was interesting. Comics that I admired and who went up, and it was a great show last night, that my stuff was like, wow, that is not, nobody really knows. And I think it helps my acting that way, because it allows me to have it as a completely separate entity. Mm. Whereas, you know, a couple, you know, guys were doing stuff that was like, I went and I saw this, and this is how I felt about it or whatever. And it was doing well. And I thought, and I just had a moment of last night where I've thought this from time to time, but I think it's really obvious to me when I see comedians that get very personal on stage. And it was just like, I had a moment of like, should I be more personal? I don't know. Would people find me interesting, or would, in addition to that, would I reveal something about myself that people would then go, oh, I don't like that he, you know, because I was trying to work on an RFK impression, you know, and I'm wondering how people are going to do that, because it's like, it's not a, you know, he actually had like a physical thing happen to him, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It's not like a mental or a neurological disorder, right?
Sure.
And so, but I wonder, I tried to do it on stage once, and then I think people were just like, that's, he's handicapped that way. You can't make do that. Like, there was the energy, and I was like, Jesus.
Yeah.
But
he's like, yeah, that's wild.
Yeah.
I don't know, my reaction to that is like, yeah, like, even though it's like, what would you call it? Like a speech impediment or something like that? Or
just like an injury, right?
Yeah,
like
vocal injury. Sounds like one of the most intelligent people I've ever heard speak before. Dude.
Very intelligent.
Yeah.
Who were some of your big inspirations with impressionists and all that when you were starting off?
You know what's funny is I didn't really, probably Jamie Foxx. I mean, because I really liked guys like Jamie Foxx, Jim Carrey, Robin Williams. I like people that did both. Like, I really love stand up, but yeah. I make my living for the most part as an actor.
Right.
Even though I've been on the road now all month, and I'm going to be on the road all next month, and you know, most of April, and it's like, that's every weekend I'm on the road, and I love it so much. But I really truly love those three guys where they were able to do both. That it wasn't, because back in the 80s, you know, it was like a lot of guys would do like Christopher Walken and that was enough, and people were like, whoa, that was Christopher Walken, and they used to do the thing where they would turn around and then come back and they'd be like, wow, it's him. And I think, which I think is fun and kitschy, but sort of the moment, you know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying that that can't be brought back by a different generation, but it just feels a little, you know, maybe not as personal and connected. And so I really liked those guys. I really liked, But I do like, I mean, I like the Impressionists a lot. I always thought that was really fun. I like Phil Hartman, Daryl Hammond.
Yeah, yeah.
Eddie Murphy, you know.
Do you feel that the comedy supports the acting and the acting supports the comedy? Like, is there a great symbiosis there?
I mean, it's like a marriage, right? It's like who's ever out of work, like, supports the other one. I mean, right. in the best way, they're both working at the same time, you know? Like, I'm doing, the cool thing about doing stand-up is I'm doing a lot of animation now at the same time.
Oh, hell yeah.
And so that's really fun, because they asked me for something this morning, and they were like, okay, when can you come and do this? And I was like, well, I'm in town these days. And that's really great, because animation is much more malleable, because they'll be like, oh, we have a 2-week window. When can you come in to do this? Mm. And, but if it's like, oh, you booked this movie, you just, then it becomes like first priority. It's got to be in first position.
Yeah.
Not to say that stand-up is important, but it's, there's something like, oh, maybe hopefully I can move. And I never mean disrespect by that, because I understand, I really appreciate and respect the art form I put in 12 years. I was somebody who did not want to be somebody who just came on the scene and was just like, yo, man, you know, I'm a stand-up now. I really worked and sort of, I think, put in my time. I probably could have put in more, but, you know, I try to put in as much as I possibly can.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. It sounds like you love both, and, you know, they're both similar enough where they don't, like, obviously contradict each other.
Well, one, I get to say somebody else's lines, and one, I get to say my own.
Oh, that's a cool way to put it.
So that's why I did it. When I was on Two Broke Girls, we, six, you know, after the first season, we couldn't take because the show was guaranteed to come back, right? So I had a summer off with nothing to do. Now, I could have traveled, I could have seen my family, but at that time, you know, stand-up just, it was big, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't as big as it is now because of YouTube, because of social media, because of streaming platforms. And so it was just one of those things where I was like with buddies and I was like, hey, why don't you just try to do stand up? And so that summer I just worked my ass off just trying to be a stand up because I'd always wanted to do it, but I truly never wanted to be somebody who just showed up, because they would have given me spots, I think, sometimes because I was on TV, which is a good and a bad thing, I guess, you know, but I wanted to earn that spot. I didn't want it to be something, and that was very important to me. That was my pride, but also like to respect the other people around me and friends in it.
And I don't know, because I'm not in comedy, but I have a massive respect for it. Is that like a almost like a rite of passage when it comes to comedy? Like, I feel people talk about it so proudly when it comes to like, I did that crappy show that got paid I got one beer for the show for this time that I was there all the time. But they were in like the lowest of the low places, working their way up to the bigger spots, right? Like,
yes. It is a rite of passage. And the thing about stand-up is it's truly the most remarkable art form. I mean, I know it's not an art, people say it's art form, but whatever it is, it's remarkable. It's you on a stage, essentially with a microphone. People have paid to see you, and what they have paid for is you making them laugh. Yep. So that's the exchange, right?
Yeah.
So it's like that is a crazy currency.
Yeah.
To pay for jokes.
Right.
And here's the thing. Yes, comedy is subjective, but there's like horror movies and comedies. Everything else is a drama. It's like,
right,
for essentially, horror movies are telling you we're going to scare you. Yeah. You're going to feel fear.
Yeah.
Something will happen. I'm not saying you're going to jump, but something will change in your, you know, internally, and same with comedy.
Right.
That something will happen. And so the other stuff is sort of lumped in for me, but I think to get there and say, hey, for an hour I'm going to make you laugh, I think that's a pretty special thing, and to be able to do that and just to give the audience what they paid for.
Hell yeah. Yeah, that bond with the audience, right? That transaction, that promise.
I feel like it's funny because I'm an actor, right? But I can't, you put 200 people in a room, 1,000, I don't care. You put 3 cameras on me and you give me my lines, I'm good.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
I can perform all day. If I had to go up on stage and you give me a camera and you got to tell me I got to try to make people laugh with my own, there's no way.
I can't. Well, here's the thing. You never know if you can until you do it. It's like learning karate from a book, right?
I could figure it out, but I have no like desire to go out there and do that.
No, for sure. You have to fail in order to succeed. Like, right? Yeah. Like it's like Daniel San could not have beaten Cobra Kai from a book.
Right.
He could do it with Mr. Miyagi and getting in fights.
Yeah.
And so the same thing with comedy is you got to get knocked out. Because you don't, you know, I mean, I think about bombs that I've had where I'm just like, Wow. And listen, I think you do learn more from bombing, but yeah. Holy hell, you never forget. I mean, it's weird. I never remember crushing. Like, I'm sure I crush or have crush or whatever. But those don't really stick with me is the times. And it's not the failure that sticks with me. It's not like the me sort of like admonishing myself, but it's the idea of like, why didn't that work? I don't ask why it worked when it worked, because you write all day to work for it to work.
Yeah. Right. I like that element then, because I love problem solving. And that's one of the reasons I love producing. I love film in general, is because there's so many things you have to figure out all the time. And directing, for example, you got to figure out on the spot, right?
Yeah.
So I do like it from that element, now that you mention it. But yeah, there's
and
just
to figure out on the fly,
yeah,
in the middle when things aren't going, you know, like you know, there's I'm doing a bunch of jokes about being Jewish right now, and I do think in certain markets, people hear the word Jewish and they hear the word Israel as the same thing,
right?
So they're not on board with it now. Maybe, and I'm assuming, I don't know. There's a million reasons why people. Maybe the joke isn't funny. Maybe I suck. But it's like, it's one of those things where I feel people tighten, and I'm almost trying to write a joke about how Israel and being Jewish are not the same thing, to sort of give them permission to laugh. Because I have a joke about Palestine, but I have a lot of jokes about being Jewish and sort of the stereotypes that sort of that have carried with us through history. But it's never enough because of what is happening in Israel, at least right now in this climate. And so that's the other thing. It's all about timing. Like, does your stuff work right now?
Yeah.
And if something happens in the current climate, like when I was doing, I've been doing Trump for 15 years, right? And then it was really fun. And then the moment he got elected, people were like, at least here, I can't, I will tell you, I did Texas like this weekend, and they were a blast. I mean, I love doing Texas, but it was people in LA specifically were just like, no, it's too real now. And so that it didn't matter that it was the same jokes, by the way. I wasn't doing different jokes, and they weren't even political jokes.
See, that's really interesting to me.
But it was just the temperature changed in the room.
Because, like, obviously the guy was popular. He was a reality TV star, realist. Like, we all knew who he was.
My buddy said he didn't vote for himself.
Yeah, and men, right. And, like, men don't change after they're, like, 40 or 50. Like, they just don't. And, like, he hasn't necessarily changed at all.
No, it's just his job title changed.
Right, right. And like, just very, very divisive.
It's weird. And so it's like, I went away from political, and then it was like, and I didn't want to be hacked. That's the thing about the impressions, right? I never, especially with Trump, I didn't want to get up there and just do things that you would agree with. Like, it's like, if he's just like, I'm such an idiot, so stupid, you know, then people kind of go, yay, or they go, boo, right? Because you're not really, there's no thought in it. There's no story. There's no point of view.
Yeah.
And so, and it's hard. I'm trying to challenge myself. Like, I'm trying to write a bit about autism right now, and I'm not autistic. At least I don't think so. And trying to figure that out, but have a point of view where people are not like, because I'll tell you, one of my great friends who opens for me all the time, he does a bit on Down syndrome, and he doesn't have Down syndrome, but he likes watching it online. Like the kids, there's a bunch of guys that have like channels and shit. It's fun. It's like, we were talking about Love on the Spectrum. Like, I love watching that. I cry every time. And he was saying how much he loves these guys. And when we were in Virginia, this woman walked out of the show. And she was just like, you can't make fun of those people. And he was like, and I've heard him do the joke 100 times. He did it in Fort Worth this past weekend, 4 sold out shows, not a single person left. Like, it didn't matter. And he, he was hosting. So he's the first person that they see. And he was talking about it. And holy hell, was it funny? And this woman just was like, grabbed her things and was like, no, I'm out of here. And you go, so, maybe it's the individual, but people are just, they're on edge about so many things. They hear Down syndrome. You must be making fun of those people instead of like, awarding them or applauding them. Excuse me.
Have you seen the Shane Gillis talk about his brothers or cousins with Down syndrome?
His uncle, I think, right?
Oh, maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. He does it special. But here's the reason why that works. Again, I think Shane is, I think he's a great comic. I truly do. His stuff is, when he does that type of stuff, it's personal. He's saying it.
So he's relating to it.
So that's the thing with me. It's harder because I don't really know. And my joke is sort of about how everybody under 30 has autism today. And so, but it's like, but But that's sort of true and not true. Like in my generation, you know, they're like, we had no peanut allergies.
Mm.
We did. Just people were dying. We just didn't know. You know what I'm saying? We're like, oh, we lost a few good men this year. You know,
yeah.
It was like getting traded on the Yankees. And so we just didn't have those kids around. But now it's like there's such an awareness of everything. But because I don't have anybody who's autistic in my family, I still have opinions on it. And so it's not as palpable. It's not as digestible for an audience because they think I'm making fun of them. And I have to constantly be like, I'm not talking about people with real art. Like, I'm talking about these other people. And it's like you have to beat them over the head with it. At least I feel that way. And maybe as I get better at telling the joke or get to be a better comic, I won't have to be as ham-fisted about it.
Right.
Yeah, but that's stuff you have to navigate. And like you said, it's problem solving, right?
Dude, on stage.
Yeah.
Bro.
Yeah. Like I do like that element though. Like one of the things I love about comedy too, and that's the same thing in a great script too. It's you are able to take something and have this perspective that nobody else has thought of or seen, right? And then you make it palpable for anybody or like entertaining or somebody to digest it, you know, like. That's when it's like, because if it's that boring through line, I don't know. Like, that's the same thing. Anybody can come up with that.
Well, they're going to do a remake of it anyway.
Yeah.
Like that thing that you have that you think is so unique, but it isn't, and they've done it 100 times. They're already doing it, and that's what a lot of those formulaic films are that get done on those smaller budgets and things like that. But to do something truly unique, like and I loved. Here's the thing. I first and foremost, I loved Saltburn. I thought it was a great movie. But one of my favorite movies of all time is The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Oh yeah.
And they're doing a series called Ripley on Netflix. Mm. It's hard. It's hard to be inventive, and then that's why people's personal stories do so well, you know. And that's the tough thing. I was thinking, like, actually, now maybe it was after we you were on the pod, but like right after. But I tried it. The bit germinated from, you know, what's crazy is we don't talk a lot about autism. Now I don't do this anymore. But I'm like, a lot of people in movies I think have autism, like the characters that we just aren't aware of it, like Thor. Thor, right? He's just a guy who's like, I want my hammer. That's all he wants, like, is to find the hammer. And I remember I like tried to explore that on stage one night. And it bombed for like 5 minutes straight. And I was talking about a packed crowd. A full house packed crowd.
Yeah.
And then I was just like tried to do the impression. I was like, no, but you know what I'm saying? Like, he's just sort of, you know, for 2 hours looking for his hammer. 2 hours. And then they were just like they were like, no. And so you got to be like, okay, another angle in, you know?
Right. Do you think it's because they just love that character so much? Or is it more because if you really break it down, it's not like he's not Tony Stark, man. He's not the smartest dude in the room.
Yes.
He's a good dude,
yes.
And he's a beast, you know, but he's not.
I think part of it is that it felt, number one, I don't think it wasn't a good joke. It wasn't well-crafted. That's first and foremost, because they'll give you credit for a well-crafted joke, even if they don't agree with you. But the less personal touch you can associate to sort of shield you from or deflect it, you know, the more clever it's got to be.
Yeah.
And I just think for something like that, it was not. So then I took a completely different approach, and I'm working through that right now. And I mean, that was like a germination where I just thought about, that's an interesting thing. And I wonder if anybody ever said that before, and maybe they never did because it wasn't funny. But, you know, I remember thinking like, and I don't remember anything else about that set that night. I just remember that part bombed. That was Oppenheimer right there. And so I was like, whatever. And so you work through it. It's like, who cares? But the bigger the stage and the more you're on, it's like whenever I do like The Store or like Factory or The Improv, even though I think there's always pressure for me to crush, to like not just work so it's hard. So then I go, well, when can I work stuff out? So then I try to work it out on the road, but I try not to do it that much on the road because they're paying, you know, tickets. But, you know, when is this going to air?
When do you want it to air?
No, I'm just curious because I have shows this weekend.
Okay, yeah, we usually do Tuesdays, but
I have plenty of shows coming up that I can pitch.
Yeah,
but I'm this one that I'm doing. I'm like, it's a small room. I'm going to be in Massachusetts this weekend. I leave tomorrow morning, and I'm like, I'm literally going to bring cameras and just do crowd work and try to work through all the bits that I can't, you know.
That's
it's
great.
Like, and then I'll give him like good shit too, you know. I'll give him like the hits, but
yeah, yeah.
I'm like, I gotta work this out because I just did Fort Worth, Austin, and Chicago this month. I just did those last three weeks, and so I'm like, and I felt like, no, they were just so full, which I was so grateful for them. So I was like, I can't really work out the new shit, you know.
Well, how different is it if you're trying to work something out being somewhere like Austin or Dallas or Chicago versus, you know, LA or Florida or whatever?
How, well, people's assholes get so tight here. I do think, and I maybe this is unpopular, it's harder to get things across, I think, that are volatile. Like, you can't do, even if it's a funny joke, and maybe I'm just not funny enough to get it out, but you just hear, I got off of the like Israel topic, and then I started talking about my trans brother, which is my brother's been trans for 20 years. And so it's like they were like more accepting of that, but then they weren't sure where I was going with it, or they weren't sure if it was real. It's weird. It's like I don't want to like give people a note card ahead of time and be like, this is what I believe in life, and these are the people in my family.
Right.
And so I think it's harder for me to work on stuff like that in LA. And maybe that's just who I am as a person. And obviously everybody else can crush at it and do whatever they want. And I just have a problem with that. But it's like, I'll try shit where I'm going like, what? Why are you guys tight on this?
Right.
And then you're like, all right. But I don't get mad at the audience. It's just in my head, I go, it worked in Fort Worth. It worked in Chicago. Mm. That's the South and the Midwest. Those are two very different places.
Yeah.
That joke worked. But here it doesn't work. And so, and there's maybe jokes here that work that don't work. So that's why you got to tour the country to really, and don't let any one city define your act.
That's good advice.
Yeah. And so you know, and that's the thing is, right? Like, because LA and New York have comics that are unbelievable and they crush, but they can't go out of the city.
Right.
Because they're so good here for like the exact political climate. But the moment they go like 2 hours north, I go, yeah, California's real different.
Yeah. That's why comedy's so tough. It doesn't even translate globally, you know, it doesn't, and even location, you know, nationwide, it's extremely it almost feels small in the sense of, so if you can hit on a big market, you're doing something crazy. I feel like
it's more, you know, I think that's why not obviously wordsmiths do very well, but I think about, you know, a lot of physical comedians that are able to sort of these are the biggest comics in the world, but you look at them and you sort of go, not that they're not they're just not maybe storytelling or like cultural comics where you're like, yeah, the thing in Portland, Oregon, they have this like, you know, ice cream shop, like that will never work in Brazil. Like, but there are other guys who are so funny, like Sebastian Maniscalco. You guys know Sebastian?
Yep.
He's so, you know, everybody can get what he's going through. He's like just this older guy who's like, I don't like getting old because I like young people. And he's just sort of like, he's like, what? And he's just, and everybody has that moment of the, oh, this fucking guy on a plane.
And
he has it, and so you kind of go, I get it, bro.
The thing that got me hooked on that guy the first time was when he did that bit about the your buddy's house with the bow and arrow, because I have a bow and arrow, so I was like crying laughing.
Relatable dude. Mean, he's you know, and you think about, there are guys that can sell like stadiums now, you know, and it's really impressive. And that is by the way, that's a different, you know, there's like, you know, there's algebra and then calculus. And
yeah.
Like, that is a different level of math when you figure out, like, there are people that are some of the best comics in the world, I think, that can't sell theaters. But it's not, it's just because they're so niche, you know, who they, or some of them, you know, the smarter comics than I have said this, there are people that aren't meant for those arenas. I know that we all see that Madison Square Garden, it's like, oh, I'm not playing Madison Square Garden, then I must be a failure, a loser. But it's like, there are some people that are unreal in a 250 seater, 120 seater, that just sit there and have you in the palm of their hand, but it doesn't make as much money. So people sort of, you know, Icarus, excuse me, they fly so close to the sun and then just hope that their wings don't get burned off. Because no one will tell you. No one will say, don't do Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
They'll all say, you got to do it. And you're like, really? Because I'm like a one-liner sit-down comic with a guitar and I do really well in coffee shops. Like, no. Madison Square Garden, let's go.
Because
it's money.
Yeah, it's big money. Yeah.
So it's balancing all that shit. So
that's where your team wants you to go.
Hey, dude, exactly. Yeah. And you'll get more fans that way.
Yeah.
Sorry, go for it.
No, you know, I know you're good friends with Jamie Foxx, and he does some pretty great impressions. I was just sitting here thinking, do you ever sit around with your buddies or any friends that can do impressions? You guys just sit and do impressions all day?
I mean,
or is it more like,
not really,
you work on it solely?
We'll go on a, like my buddy Matt and I, we'll go to a restaurant. We've done this a few times, and we'll just get, not intentionally, but we'll just start having some drinks and eating and, you know, just like out for dinner, and we'll make a night of it, and we'll just think of the dumbest impression that we can think of. Like, if it's
this guy Brock, I mean,
like Thor, what would it even be? like Thor as Barack Obama. I just thought of that in the moment, but him going like, let me be clear. You know, like just something that would just make us laugh when we're drunk.
The Missy Sam Elliott one was hilarious.
Yeah, I appreciate you, man. Yeah.
There was like a Gandalf as, it was at the Laugh Factory.
I used to do Gandalf reading like 50 Shades of Grey.
Something like that.
It was like when I was younger, really good. I was just like, just trying to do stuff that like I thought would be funny or just like stupid. Like, you know, just like the way that you just make your friends laugh. Like I'm doing Anthony Bourdain eating out a woman and, you just, whatever it is, or like Neil deGrasse, Mike Tyson, or like, you know, and you're just, it's just trying to be, I'm working on Jason Statham stuff now that I'm really working out. And, I do him in a lot of environments because I love Jason Statham, but he's such like an interesting sort of dude, and so I'm like, that's what I've just literally been getting on stage as like talking as him, and just like figuring stuff out, and it's whatever, like whatever would make your friends, I feel like, laugh in like the 15th hour of a road trip,
right?
Like that, so we'll do that. We'll like get in a car, or we'll do like, you know, comedians are like telling the dumbest jokes as like, you know, Trump or whatever it is, you know.
Yeah. But that's the stuff. Good.
No, I was going to, I want to definitely make sure we get in like upcoming stuff and stuff to promote. I unfortunately have to roll, but,
No, you're good. Let me,
but yeah, like whatever you want to plug.
No, I appreciate you, brothers. Thank you so much for having me on.
Dude, I apologize. I have a heart out today. I really do. This has been fucking awesome. I'm really glad I got to meet you. And
dude, this is great. So, at Jonathan Kite on Instagram, the Jonathan Kite on TikTok, Jonathan Kite on Facebook, and then come see me on the road, you know, or drop me a line in the Instagram comment section, because I'll read those if I, you know, where I'm going to be. But I'm going to be in Dallas, Texas, the 8th and 9th at Hyenas. I'm going to be at Funny Bone in Des Moines, Iowa, March 22nd and 23rd. March 8th and 9th was Hyenas, Dallas. And then the 29th and 30th, I'll be at Stand Up Live in Huntsville, Alabama. And then I'll be at Funny Bone, Dayton, Ohio, April 26th and 27th.
Love that. Sick. My girlfriend's from Ohio, so.
Oh, cool. Great. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a great, the middle of the country. So I'm hoping that everything works the best there.
Hell yeah, dude. And we'll put all that in the descriptions below. Awesome. So we'll have that all listed too. And
JonathanKiteComedy.com. JonathanKiteComedy.com. Thank you so much. I never say it, by the way. That's why I realize somebody will be like, Mike PR or whatever, will be like, you didn't mention anything. And I was like, you're absolutely right. I said nothing about anything. They're like, they don't even know who you are.
Yeah. Dude, I'm bad like that too. I really like, I don't know if it's like a self-promotion thing that I'm not trying to do. I need to do more of it. I just don't think of it.
Dude, me
it doesn't
neither.
Come into my head.
If you like, hadn't asked, I wouldn't have like,
yeah.
Nah, there, you got to make sure.
Like when you're wearing a great event, dude, I've maybe because I've spent and grew up on social media, I spent so much time on my phone that when I'm at an event, I'm like, I just want to be there.
100%.
You know, and I'm like, and then I forget and I'm like,
yeah,
didn't get a damn photo with, you know, this, whatever the hell at this 100%. Sick ass, you know, I'm like, damn it. But it's all good, dude. Good to see you again, bro. Dude,
love you, brother. Great to see you, man.
Yeah, you too, bro.
Thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Thank you for watching Studio 22.
Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.
And follow our socials at Studio 22 Podcast.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, ah, yeah. Love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Turns out a delightfully clean home can make for a delightful start to the day. At Mrs. Meyer's, everything they make is inspired by the garden. With plant-derived and other thoughtfully chosen ingredients, their cleaning products smell like a dream and work like the dickens, leaving your home sparkly clean and your to-do list tackled in no time. Goodness, there's no better feeling than that. Mrs. Meyer's, rooted in goodness. Visit MrsMeyer's.com today.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Ah, thinking about gas mileage. You know, changing your oil with a full synthetic oil like Castrol Edge can help your engine get more miles. Right now, you can get 5 quarts with an STP Extended Life Oil Filter for only $36.99. Get started on your next job today with the parts you need when you need them at AutoZone or AutoZone.com. Get in the zone, AutoZone. Restrictions apply.